United States.
Lexington. Son of a Slave. Lessons in Racial History from Daniel Smith. Perhaps the last direct link to slavery.
Most Americans don't know much about slavery. In a recent survey, only half could name it as the main cause of the Civil War. Yet for Daniel Smith, the whipping and crying post, the hanging tree and other horrors of the antebellum South are not ill-taught, dusty history, but vivid family stories. The 89-year-old retired bureaucrat heard them from his father, Abram, who was born a slave in Virginia in 1863, 2 years before the war ended. On Saturday evenings after dinner, he and my elder siblings would gather and he would tell them what his parents had told him about slavery, recalls Mr. Smith, an only slightly stooped octogenarian at his house in Washington, D.C. I used to sneak out of bed and sit listening on the floor. I remember hearing about two slaves who were chained together at the wrist and tried to run away. They were found by some vicious dogs hiding under a tree and hanged from it. I also remember a story about an enslaved man who was accused of lying to his owner. He was made to step out into the snow with his family and put his tongue on an icy wagon wheel until it stuck. When he tried to remove it, half his tongue came off. My father cried as he told us these things. It is chilling to hear him, a direct link to the history America is in many ways still struggling to escape. Sayna Butler, who wrote a book on the children of slaves, identified only around 40 still alive in 1999, all of whom have since died. She did not track down Mr. Smith, who was known in Washington as a well-connected civil rights activist, but rarely mentioned his family history. It was something under the surface that we were not proud of, he says. As his father's only surviving child, after the death of his brother Abe earlier this year, he may well be the last living offspring of an American slave. His memories underline how recent many of the rawest and most formative events of the American story are, especially for those on the receiving end of them. Slavery and the last Native American land grabs are only two lifetimes away. No wonder the politics surrounding them on all sides are so intense. And the effect is particularly powerful in Mr. Smith's case because of how many momentous events in black history he has witnessed. Lexington got in touch to discuss his father, only to learn that Mr. Smith had marched with Martin Luther King in Washington and Selma, feuded with the Black Panthers, been chased by Ku Klux Klan-inspired Knight Riders through rural Alabama, been asked by the CIA to spy on the ANC in South Africa, and was in the crowd, tears pouring down his cheeks, to witness the inauguration of a black president. "A friend of mine calls me the Black Forrest Gump," he deadpans. In fact, his brushes with history chiefly reflects his talents and drive, which are characteristic of his black American generation. His father, a janitor aged 70 at the time of Mr. Smith's birth, was killed by a hit-and-run driver when Daniel was six. Abram's death left his wife and six children almost destitute. Yet he had bred in them a fierce determination to rise. We always said in our family, if you want to beat white people, you've got to outwork them. You've got to outsmart them. You've got to stay up longer at night. Mr. Smith graduated from high school in the mainly white town of Winsted, Connecticut, while working long mornings and evenings in a veterinary surgery to earn money. After a stint with the Army in Korea, he went to college under the GI Bill, became a social worker, then enrolled in veterinary school in Alabama. Three of his five siblings also went to college. The success of the generation raised by former slaves changed my whole perspective on this country's history, says Miss Butler. Considering what they faced and what they achieved, they are America's greatest generation. In New England, Mr. Smith's race was an everyday hurdle, but ultimately not a deal-breaker. He knew he could never make the first move on a white girl. "I don't want to have to cut you down from that tree," his mother would tell him. Yet he would rise. "America has always given me the right to work." Alabama, where he arrived at the tail end of Jim Crow, was a different story. Southern blacks marvelled at his car and confidence among whites, including white women. It irritates him still. "Women are women, black, white, Indian or Chinese," he says. He was drawn into the civil rights struggle, then roiling the state and run-ins with Stokely Carmichael, a charismatic panther who wanted to put money Mr. Smith collected for anti-poverty programs to more radical use. He preferred King's moderation. But he has more time for Malcolm X's radicalism now. We needed both, King and the Panthers, the pull and the push, he says. That reconsideration seems to reflect his downbeat view of race relations since the 1960s. Socially, he acknowledges there has been huge progress. Many of his nieces and nephews are married to whites. His second wife is white, though it was a while before he would dare hold her hand in public, she notes. But institutionally, he looks back on a history of failed promises. He believes racist policing puts black children in greater peril today than he ever faced. He also notes that the shining light of Barack Obama's election provoked a militant white reaction in the form of Donald Trump, which is not weakening. The insurrection that the former president provoked and his party has refused to investigate, during which a Confederate flag was paraded through the Capitol, was so revolting for our Constitution, he says. There's a big question about where we go from now. And there Mr. Smith, though visibly troubled, pulls himself up. Incidentally, we could never talk negatively about America in front of my father, he says, speaking of a poor man, born a slave, who wore a well-brushed suit and fob watch to church on Sunday and drove his children to succeed. He did not have much, but he really, really loved America. Isn't that funny?